Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, May 26, 2014. South Sudan denies detaining UN staff members or holding up UN convoys.
Our staff members have been assaulted and illegally detained by alleged security forces. I'm saying alleged because we're investigating. We are not sure who it was exactly, but men in uniform, that's for sure.
And the death toll from a cholera outbreak rises in South Sudan.
So far, we have 467 cases that have been reported in health facilities in Juba. And that's an increase. At the end of last week, it was 395 cases.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan Army officials say they are not responsible for the recent attack and detention of two United Nations employees in Juba. They also deny delaying UN supply shipments around the country. Officials say they are prepared to open an investigation if need be. Megumi Davis-Rakowinji has more for VOA from Juba.
Sudan People's Liberation Army spokesperson Kanofilp Aguer says the UN mission in South Sudan needs to provide more details on the alleged assaults.
The affected or the victim would have come to the SPLA General Headquarters and bring the complaint. SPLA Directorate of Administrations is capable of looking into any allegations on abuse or violation of any rules.
Aguer says they have not received a formal complaint. UNMISS officials put out a statement last week accusing South Sudan security forces of being behind the assault and detention of two staff members. UNMISS spokesperson Ariane Quintier says they are still looking into who is responsible for the incidents.
Our staff members have been assaulted and illegally detained by alleged security forces. I'm saying alleged because we're investigating. We are not sure who it was exactly, but men in uniform, that's for sure.
Quintier declined to provide any more details on the assault, but says they would present the information to the appropriate authorities. She says they have already briefed authorities about ongoing restrictions of UNMISS patrols, especially in Unity State. She says holding up convoys at checkpoints hampers the ability to reach civilians in desperate need of help. She blamed both the SPLA and the opposition forces for restricting peacekeepers' movements.
The seeding season is soon passed. We might have famine, and we need urgently now, it's a race against time, to be able to move throughout this country to support the people, UNMISS or the UN, to be able to preposition, to be able to face the chaos and the catastrophe that, towards which we're going.
Kano Aguer vehemently denies the SPLA has restricted UNMISS movements anywhere in the country.
We wanted the date when they were denied to move anywhere, and we wanted the names of the location so that we can follow up. But if you just blanketly accuse or try to blame lack of delivery on SPLA, we will not accept that.
Quintier says all the incidents violate the status of force agreement between the UN and the government of South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Just 11 days after the World Health Organization and South Sudanese government officials announced a cholera outbreak in South Sudan, health officials now say at least 400 cases of cholera have been reported across the country. They say 14 people have died since the outbreak began. UNICEF's head of communications in South Sudan, Dune Porter, tells Charlton Doki about the latest statistics regarding that cholera outbreak.
So far, we have 467 cases that have been reported in health facilities in Juba. And that's an increase. At the end of last week, it was 395 cases. However, the number of deaths has not increased, which is very good news. Since last week, we've had seven deaths in health facilities and seven deaths reported in the community from cholera.
The number of deaths hasn't gone up, despite the fact that we now have more than 400 cases, but we still have only 14 deaths. What could be the reason?
Well, cholera is dangerous because it causes severe dehydration and very, very quickly. So the best way that it can be managed is through case management, through oral rehydration solution, through IV fluids, and also patients with severe symptoms are also given antibiotics. But the most important thing is to rehydrate people. It's the dehydration that causes the fatalities. And so there's more case management available in Juba now. And also through the efforts of, in particular, UNICEF has been taking the lead on community mobilization and communication. And one of our main messages in terms of treatment is to seek treatment early. So if someone has watery diarrhea 3 times a day, and that may or may not be accompanied by vomiting, but if someone in your family has diarrhea, bring them to a treatment center so that they can get rehydration. And that's really the thing in terms of treatment that will save lives.
Do you know if the outbreak has already spread to other states? Has this been confirmed?
We don't yet have any confirmation, no, on whether the outbreak has spread into other states. As you know, there have been cases of acute watery diarrhea reported in other states, but so far we don't have any confirmation, no.
Now, in terms of the response, I understand that UNICEF has been able to bring in more supplies to deal with this situation. How else are you responding?
Yes, UNICEF, in terms of treatment, has been providing frontline treatment and care of patients, and of course we did help to establish the cholera treatment center at the Juba Teaching Hospital, and we've been providing tents and life-saving supplies, including medicines and oral rehydration solution, as I said, and intravenous fluids and equipment to give those intravenous fluids. Also, very importantly, the protective gear, the rubber boots and gloves and aprons and face masks that will protect the people giving the treatment. We're also providing huge 1,000-liter water bladders that will provide clean drinking water at the cholera treatment centres, and even fuel to ensure that there's electricity available at the treatment centres. And you know, and on that we're working with the Ministry of Health, of course, and WHO and non-governmental organisations, MEDAIR and Médecins Sans Frontières. We have also pre-positioned what we call diarrheal disease kits in many of the protection of civilian sites in Malakal, in Bentiu, Bor, and in Wau, as well as having kits available in Juba and in Rumbek for immediate response. We've brought in already one plane load of additional diarrheal disease kits. We have 2 more planes arriving on Wednesday, bringing in even more diarrheal disease kits. And what's in these diarrheal disease kits is, again, the essential oral rehydration solution, IV fluids, intravenous fluids, and the equipment, that protective gear that I mentioned. And each diarrheal disease kit contains treatment for 100 severe cases of diarrhea and 400 moderate cases of diarrhea, as well as 100 cases of bloody diarrhea.
Is Dune Porter, UNICEF's Chief of Strategic Communications in South Sudan, speaking to my colleague Charlton Doki about the cholera outbreak earlier today in Juba. Khartoum's citizens are concerned over the recent deployment of counterinsurgency troops in and around the capital. On May 18th, the director of the National Intelligence and Security Service ordered 3 brigades of the Rapid Support Forces to be deployed around Khartoum. Following the arrest of Umma Party Chief Sadiq al-Mahdi, the former prime minister, al-Mahdi has accused the security forces of rape and looting in Darfur and South Kordofan before his arrest. VOA fellow May Abdel Nasser has more.
Mohammed Hamdan Hemiti is the chief of the Rapid Support Forces operating in and around Darfur and South Kordofan. He says the government has ordered his troops to be positioned around Khartoum for security reasons. But the action comes on the heels of al-Mahdi's arrest.
These forces are here to beef up security, nothing more. We don't necessarily expect anything to happen. Our forces are usually present in Khartoum. It's just that we have received instructions to deploy them around the capital.
This is not the first time the Rapid Support Forces or RSF have been accused of abuses in the war-torn regions of Darfur and South Kordofan. But Hemiti insists his troops are there solely to fight the rebels in Darfur and are in fact protecting civilians in Darfur and South Kordofan.
You have to be fair. The Rapid Support Forces are enhancing security all over the country, from Kordofan all the way to Darfur. Citizens are now moving at will, roads have been opened up, and it's all by virtue of our presence. The Rapid Support Forces were constructed under the auspices of the National Intelligence and Security Services. They are legal and disciplined.
Sudanese political analyst Mehdi Ghezouli says the deployment of the RSF in Khartoum was in direct response to al-Mahdi's accusation against them.
Deployment in Khartoum was essentially a message to say that we are not a peripheral force. We are a force with national ambitions. And we are, if not equal to the Sudan Armed Forces, the official army, then at least a parallel to it.
Al-Ghezouli says the National Intelligence and Security Services, which is the official body controlling the RSF, is trying to gain a stronger position of power in Khartoum.
To secure its position, the intelligence service needs to claim public glamour and importance as big as that of the army. And this is what they're trying to do by pushing themselves further into military affairs, presenting themselves as guardians of the nation, if you like. They're not only an intelligence service, but we're also a military force.
But Sudanese Information Minister Ahmed Bilal insists that the deployment of the RSF in Khartoum has nothing to do with al-Mahdi's accusations. He says it's a routine exercise to train them on maintaining security in the capital.
Before, the capital have been attacked by some rebels and this sort. And we wouldn't like this to be repeated anymore in the future. That's why how to make safety to the capital and how to do defense. They are making this training and off and on. Now there is no troops there.
Bilal claims the counter-insurgency troops have completed their training and have already been withdrawn from Khartoum. He also says Sadiq al-Mahdi will be released from prison soon, but he did not provide a date. Haj Hamid is a member of civil society in Khartoum, confirmed the presence of Rapid Support Forces in Khartoum.
There are three divisions encircling Khartoum from outside.
For VOA News, I am May Abdel Nasser in Washington.
VOA fellow Nabil Biagio contributed to that report. The UN says hunger kills more people every year than AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis combined. Despite progress since 1990, it's estimated that more than 840 million people still do not have enough to eat. Nevertheless, the director of the Bread for the World Institute says recent efforts can bring a dramatic improvement. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Asma Latif says the opportunity exists to tackle hunger on a sustained basis, and not just address emergency situations.
Well, I think we're in a good space right now. I think for the first time in human history, we have the prospect of ending global hunger within a generation by 2030.
The Bread for the World Institute is a Christian-based organization providing strategies to end world hunger. Latif says achieving the potential to ensure food security has been a joint effort.
This has been due to a lot of deliberate work on the part of governments around the world, particularly the governments of countries that are hardest hit by hunger, but also by the support of the United States and the leadership of the United States.
The 1996 UN World Food Summit issued the Rome Declaration. It called for reducing by half the number of chronically undernourished people by 2015. However, Lateef says at the time, there was no unified strategy as to how to do that.
There was a great focus on industrialization. I think people felt that if you helped countries develop and have economic growth, that that would address hunger as well. And so you did find, actually, a huge reduction in extreme poverty around the world, but that didn't translate into necessarily at the same pace a reduction in hunger.
She says the focus on how to fight hunger changed during the 2008 food security crisis, as high prices and shortages affected many countries.
It was the global response that came as a result of that food price crisis. It was a real wake-up call. Riots around the world as people were really struggling to be able to afford food, and prices of basic commodities had just skyrocketed. That got the attention of a lot of policymakers, including U.S. leaders at the time. And since then, the Obama administration has really made food security and hunger a priority within global development programs and has galvanized global attention to this issue.
Leaders realized that food security was a threat to national security. Lateef says policies developed during the food crisis have made a difference.
You know, we're very close to achieving the Millennium Development Goal of halving hunger by 2015. We won't make that target because it's next year and because of the food price crisis. But the effort that's been put in over the last few years really puts us on track.
The Bread for the World Institute director says currently enough food is being produced to feed everyone on the planet. The problem, she says, is that many people cannot afford it or gain access to it. And a lot of food is wasted every year by poor harvesting and inadequate storage and transportation. It's estimated the world population will grow from about 7 billion to 9 billion by 2050. As a result, the emphasis in recent years has been on investing in smallholder farms and making them much more efficient.
With growing population, as well as with the impact of climate change on food security, there will be a need to really become more innovative and make use of all the available arable land and get more out of the land than we currently do. In Africa, a lot of the land is not being used to its full potential.
Lateef praises the U.S. government's recent Feed the Future Progress Report, saying it links livelihoods to smallholder farm investments. She calls on the U.S. and others to ensure those investments are made over the long term. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The beginning of the rainy season raises the risk of cholera and dysentery. These are infections of the intestine that cause cramps, severe diarrhea, dehydration, and sometimes even death. The diseases can be spread when floodwaters carry human waste. And even after the rain ends, the tiny organisms that cause the diseases can continue to live on in stagnant pools of water. That's why it's so important for you and your family not to eat contaminated food or drink bad water. Only drink bottled water or water that's been boiled or purified. Peel raw fruits and vegetables before eating them, or even better, cook them for at least 5 minutes and eat them while they're still hot. Finally, make sure you wash your hands with soap and water before eating. Taking these steps will help you and your family avoid serious disease.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a photographer who was murdered in the Central African Republic underscores the danger of covering war in Africa. Stay tuned.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on the events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 16:30 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We're also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That is South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you think about foreign organizations monitoring elections in your country?
Foreign organization in our country, when it comes to elections, they have a very important role. I think their being in any election is actually to be either an observation or a monitoring. And when they are monitoring, they are actually going to report on how the election should be improved.
We believe the international NGOs and friends and our friend in region, they are important for that period.
We may have some of international bodies to monitor our election or election progress.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The recent murder in the Central African Republic of French photographer Camille Lepage served to highlight the dangers facing journalists trying to bring images of war to the attention of the world. Photographer Marissa Roth has spent nearly 30 years documenting the devastating impact of conflict on women and children. Mike O'Sullivan has this report from Los Angeles.
Marissa Roth lost family members in the Holocaust, and she is drawn to the stories of Holocaust survivors. She photographed many for the Simon Wiesenthal Center, Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles. A former news photographer, she was part of the Los Angeles Times team that won a Pulitzer Prize for covering the 1992 Los Angeles riots. Her work has also taken her to the edge of war zones. She was working in Pakistan when a suggestion by a colleague started her journey.
And she said, you know, there's a story that nobody cares about, and this was towards the end of the 10-year war between the Soviet Union and Afghanistan. And she said, you know, there's 100,000 Afghan war widows, and nobody cares. And I thought, well, I care.
Her passion for the subject would lead to a Kosovar refugee camp in Albania and to Japan to meet survivors of the Hiroshima atomic bombing. She has created a photo exhibit of images from 12 conflicts. In Northern Ireland, she photographed a former bomber turned peace activist and a woman who lost her husband to the sectarian violence, who offered Roth an insight.
She said, I bet you find that women are the same everywhere. And so I learned a lot from my subjects because I thought, wow, she's really right. And I think really the constants are the absolute fundamentals of life. You know, it's keeping home and hearth and keeping children healthy and safe and fed. It's keeping families together.
From the Balkans to Pakistan and Southeast Asia, Roth has shown the scars of war, including victims and survivors of the Khmer Rouge brutality in Cambodia and Vietnamese children born with birth defects caused by the defoliant Agent Orange. She also shows the grief of an American mother holding a portrait of her son, a Marine who died in Iraq. Roth says that amid the sadness, the character of the survivors has impressed her.
That the human spirit is pretty remarkable and very resilient and beautiful, and that in spite of war and madness and destruction, you know, that people get on with their lives.
Marissa Roth's most recent work has again taken her halfway around the world, this time to document an endangered culture. She is publishing a book of photographs of Tibet, highlighting its Buddhist religion, its art and people. Her exhibit, One Person Crying, Women and War, has just finished a showing in Oradour-sur-Glane, France, the site of a massacre by German troops during World War II. The exhibit will open in June at a Veterans Memorial Park in the U.S. state of Wisconsin. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
We now go back to the African continent, where Cameroon and Chad have deployed 1,000 troops to their borders with Nigeria to fight the Islamist group Boko Haram. The troops were deployed shortly after leaders from the two countries met in Yaoundé and declared war against the militant group. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
These are soldiers of Cameroon's Rapid Intervention Battalion singing in excitement as they leave Yaoundé, capital of the West African country, for the border with Nigeria. They headed out barely a day after Presidents Idriss Déby of Chad and Paul Biya of Cameroon announced they are waging war on Boko Haram. Colonel Didier Bajek, spokesperson of the Cameroon military, told VOA that the soldiers will work with the local people to find out who members of the violent group are, since the soldiers are aware they will be fighting an enemy that uses unconventional tactics.
We have occupied the field so that the response should be more spontaneous. I want to say that we need a total cooperation from the public. This will encourage us in the field to know exactly that people are thinking about us and are supporting their defense forces. We especially await information from the population.
Before the soldiers left, Cameroon's defense minister, Edgar Aleme Bengo, met with Chad's minister of national defense, Benindo Tatola, in Yaoundé. Ngo said Chad had also deployed troops to work together with Cameroonian forces on the borders with Nigeria. He also said troops from the two countries will cross into Nigeria and fight Boko Haram in collaboration with Nigerian forces. Nigeria has often accused Cameroon of not doing enough to fight Boko Haram, even though the terrorist group frequently crosses into Cameroonian territory. Cameroon has been attacked several times by Boko Haram. Earlier this month, rebels from the violent group attacked a military post in Kuseri, far north Cameroon, and freed one of their members being held there. They also attacked the locality of Waza in north Cameroon and stole 12 vehicles, kidnapped 10 Chinese workers, and killed a Cameroonian soldier. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé.
That's it for our show this Monday. We leave you with the song Nadoki by Jimmy Bob.
Nadoki dugu merisa ya kwana Jomo Mercedes love on igene Nuololo Nadoki Nadoki ya wade malita muze Nadoki 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 ya wade malita yaba Nadoki Nadoki, Nadoki ya wakitenko tore. Nadoki, Nadoki, Nadoki ya wade malita muze. Nadoki dugu merisa ya kwana Jama Mercedes love on igene Wololo, he Nadoki Nadoki awade malita yaba Nadoki, Nadoki Nadoki awade malita muze Nadoki, Nadoki Nadoki awakitenko tore Nadoki, Nadoki Nadoki awade malita muze Jama Mercedes love on igenen Wololo Nadoki Nadoki awade malita muze Nadoki 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 awade malita yaba Nadoki 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 awade malita muze Nadoki 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 awakitenko tore
Ha ha!
We've been listening to Jimmy Bob with the song Nadoki. I'm your host, Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. We will meet you back here on the same station tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.